There's quite a different sound on the steps of the U.S. Supreme Court, 40 miles south of Baltimore down Interstate 95. Today, the justices hear arguments in a case that could settle the question of legal same-sex marriage, whether banning it is an illegal form of discrimination. Correspondent Todd Zwillick was in the Supreme Court today as oral arguments were delivered and filed this dispatch.
Hundreds of people are gathered outside the court demonstrating with flags and signs after 2.5 hours of oral arguments in the landmark Supreme Court case on same-sex marriage. Inside, skeptical conservatives like Justice Samuel Alito told lawyers, you don't want same-sex couples to simply join the institution of marriage. You want to redefine it. It's an institution, he said, that's been the same for millennia in thousands of societies. Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, a liberal, shot back, marriage has been redefined many times over the years. Just 100 years ago, men were legally superior to women in marriage. That's not the case anymore. But most of the attention on Justice Anthony Kennedy, the potential swing vote in this case. Kennedy seemed open to the idea that states need more time to find out the social and psychological impact on the children of same-sex couples before the court rules that there's a constitutional right to gay marriage. But states that want to keep marriage as defined between one man and one woman said that their compelling interest was promoting bonds between biological children and their parents. And on the idea that same-sex couples can't bond just as closely with their children, Justice Kennedy said the premise was just wrong.
The case before the court is Obergefell v. Hodges. The justices will be asked to look at two issues in the case. First, does the 14th Amendment require a state to license a marriage between two people of the same sex? And second, does the 14th Amendment require a state to recognize a marriage between two people of the same sex when their marriage was lawfully licensed and performed out of state? David Michener is one of the plaintiffs in the case. He says he's fighting for his marriage to his late husband, William Herbert Ives, to be recognized.
We were married July 22, 2013 in Delaware. And shortly thereafter, Bill just got what we thought he had, the flu, and he got sicker and sicker by the day. Unbeknownst to us and even the doctors at the time, he had a bacterial infection of his heart. And it got to the point where Bill couldn't even walk 2 feet without having to sit because he couldn't breathe. So unfortunately, he deteriorated to the point where they had to rush him into the operating room. He was on the table for 18 hours, and unfortunately, 3 days later, his body gave way and he died.
Now, we are very sorry for those circumstances, and clearly, your family has had enormous grief to deal with.
Thank you.
But if Bill lived, you would not be in a situation where you would be looking to be a test case before the U.S. Supreme Court on the question of same-sex marriage. Yes or no?
No. We did everything when we relocated to Ohio. Knowing that it wasn't the East Coast where we originally came from, that we would have to protect ourselves. So we had legal documents drawn up giving each of us rights to the other's body in the event that something were to happen. I'm at rest knowing that I have the original document showing that Bill was married to me. The state of Ohio would like to have my name removed from the death certificate and Bill's marital status to be listed as single, not married, which would inevitably make my marriage null and void, which happened in Delaware.
Because this is a matter of, and I say this with the greatest of respect, a matter of explicit paperwork, it makes it actually better for the U.S. Supreme Court because they have a very clear-cut issue, which is unlike some of the other cases. I mean, they really have to decide if we're going to say that same-sex marriage is for real or not everywhere in the United States. And that they're sort of forced to do that by the circumstances of this case. But this is anything but paperwork in your own life. Who does this affect besides you?
Well, it affects me, my 15-year-old daughter, my 13-year-old son, my 5-year-old son, you know, they're living in limbo of validity of my marriage and their father's death.
How important is it to you, and how important do you think it would be for Bill, if he were here to speak, that this settles the matter once and for all in the broadest possible terms?
Well, Bill is here. He's the one that is guiding me through this. This has not been easy. I would just be ecstatic if it came down that everyone was given the equal rights and the validity of a piece of paper.
Did you ever think in a million years you'd be in this situation?
Never, never, ever. I'm a proud father who loves my children, wants them to be safe, but I'm also showing them that if you have something that you feel is wrong and you think you have the facts on your side, you got to fight for it. And this certainly is worth fighting for not just me, but the whole country.
David Michener is in the courtroom today as the Supreme Court takes on this case. He told me he knows Bill is still with him as he goes through his process. And even before he made it to the steps of the court, he said he was just glad to have the chance to bring his kids back to the nation's capital.
Bill and I put a bucket list together,
right,
what we wanted to do with the kids. So this is one of the last things that, this and Disney World, that I wanted to wipe off the list. And hopefully by the time that we go to Disney World, the ruling will be out and we can use that as a celebratory vacation. That part I planned.
To see photos of David and Bill and their family, visit us at thetakeaway.org. Coming up next, Matthew Frank explains why some say this decision should be left to the voters, not the U.S. Supreme Court. As the Supreme Court hears arguments, 13 states still have bans on same-sex marriage, and plenty of Americans believe marriage should be strictly defined as a relationship between one man and one woman. There are also those who feel the court should not be final arbiter on this point, that instead the issue should be left up to the states and perhaps ultimately the voters to decide. Matthew Frank is director of the Center on Religion and the Constitution at the Witherspoon Institute and professor emeritus of political science at Radford University. Professor Frank, welcome to The Takeaway.
Hi, John. How are you?
Great, and it's great to talk to you. And how will this opposition case or this case against the plaintiffs be laid out in front of the court as you see it today?
Well, I think I can say what the argument will not be about today. It won't be about whether same-sex marriage is a good idea or is the wave of the future or the way history is going. It won't be about your last guest and his situation with his late spouse. It will be about whether the people of the states, acting directly or through their representatives, have the rightful authority to define the marriage laws in their states without the Supreme Court foisting some alleged constitutional right on them, contrary to their wishes. So it's a case about constitutional rights claims on one side and constitutional authority claims on the other, not about the merits of the same-sex marriage question.
Will the plaintiffs attempt to make it about the merits of the same-sex marriage question? Because as I understand it, the previous case in 2010 struck down Prop 8 in California, which would seem to suggest that voters don't have the last word here.
Right. I mean, the judge in the Prop 8 case struck that popular referendum amending the California Constitution down. The Supreme Court did not reach the merits of that case. They decided in a rather convoluted ruling that there was a lack of standing on the part of some parties in California trying to defend Prop 8. Oddly, I think improperly, they left the lower court judge's ruling in place rather than vacating it. But that's all water under the bridge in California. The merits of the question of same-sex marriage at the state level simply have not come before the court directly before today, not even 2 years ago when the Federal Defense of Marriage Act was partially struck down by a 5-4 vote of the justices. So I heard you say with your last guest, John, that you asked him whether he was hoping that the Supreme Court would settle this once and for all with a ruling. I think there may be a temptation on the part of some of the justices to attempt a settlement of it once and for all, but whatever they do won't settle it once and for all. An adverse ruling against the right of the people to govern themselves on the question of marriage will simply reignite culture war controversies over this, very similar to what we've seen for 42 years on the abortion issue.
And if the court rules broadly that marriage and discrimination against people in that civil ceremony constitutes discrimination under the 14th Amendment, you don't believe that that would set a precedent that would settle this for the foreseeable future?
No, I don't. There would be much celebration on one side of this issue, but much, I think, hardening resolve on the other side to oppose what the court has done, to march, to protest, to appoint justices who get the Constitution right next time, as many of us think they should this time. Yeah, I don't think it would settle it. You know, when the Supreme Court intrudes on questions that the Constitution is silent about and actually leaves to the people to govern themselves on, the people are right to be incensed about those pretensions of judicial arrogance, which I think the justices should be aware is the future they would be preparing for themselves if they do the wrong thing in this case.
But wouldn't you be creating a precedent? And again, I'm not arguing either way here. It's okay for the state to decide one way or another, but unless the court says you don't recognize those ceremonies in one state or another, we're basically back to a kind of, you know, pre-end of slavery issue where, you know, one state had it one way, one state had it the other way. That just was not sustainable judicially or even morally. There has to be some sort of consistency. If someone gets married in the state of Washington, then it's going to be recognized in the state of Florida. There's precedent on that.
Well, I don't know that that's actually so. States do have different marriage laws, and there are and have been throughout American history some marriages that are solemnized in one state but not recognized in another. So it's not. I don't think it's at all analogous to the slavery issue. And interestingly enough, it was the Supreme Court's effort to nationalize the slavery question and impose a solution once and for all in the Dred Scott case that actually inflamed the controversy, as we know, rather than settling it. So these things are better left to politics. And the democratic process has succeeded for the advocates of same-sex marriage in about 11 states. All that effort over the last decade and a half to protect marriage between a man and a woman would be for naught if the Supreme Court now says that this is a form of unlawful discrimination.
And do you think that would inflame in the way that Dred Scott brought on the problems with violence in America? Do you think that would inflame things, that kind of a ruling?
No. I don't mean to suggest that it would bring on another civil war, but I think it would be very analogous to the situation that's very poisonous in our politics that has been in place in the culture wars ever since Roe versus Wade.
All right. Matthew Frank is director of the Center on Religion and the Constitution at the Witherspoon Institute and professor emeritus of political science at Radford University. Thanks so much.
Thank you, John.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.